Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this bright and early March day with our subject of man. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And again, we're so glad you could join us today. We'll begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 344 of the Seventh Day, Mary Baker Eddy's Lessons of the Seventh Day. He says, man's true individuality is the living expression of the mind that is God. Deity and his expression must forever be united. Man lives to express God. Would we have a grander destiny? What you and I and our brothers think goes to make up the consciousness of the world. We are not individualized outside of our brother, but are one with him as the Christ, hence the command to love our neighbor as ourselves. We have no science apart from our brother. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. I love that. We live to express God. Mm-hmm. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 123. Watch lest in your desire and effort to grow and improve yourself spiritually, you gauge your progress by comparing yourself with man instead of with God. When you compare yourself with man, you are in danger of becoming complacent and self-satisfied because you find so many that are so much worse than you are. When you compare yourself with God's perfect man, which is God's idea of you, you are in no danger of a premature satisfaction or sense of lethargy. When you use God's idea of man as your standard of perfection, you will gradually expand the compass of your efforts to include all mankind and to see them as perfect ideas of God. Whereas, as long as your basis of comparison is mortal man, your efforts will remain limited and personal.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, I, from my own experience, I can, as I was working on this week, it is so subtle to look around and to just compare yourself or think that you have something greater or less than your neighbor or your family member. And it's very subtle. It just sort of sneaks in and for me, it's taken a lot of awareness and watchfulness to correct my thinking if I detect that at all.
Thank you. Good, honest answer.
I think it's interesting, too, because mortal mind is always trying to get us to back off and to let down and to just, you know, take a break. And it'll try with first getting you to compare yourself, because there's always someone who seems to maybe not be doing as well or not as much or whatever. And if that doesn't work, then I know for me, it tries to come in and say, well, you had this really good inspiration yesterday. You've done a lot, you know, that's good. Take a break. So it's always trying to, you know, just to get us to stop doing. So this was a really good reminder to, you know, don't stop until you've hit, you know, God level.
Yes, thank you.
I like what where it says God's idea of man as our standard of perfection. I think I like that. I this is what we aspire to. I mean, we're already that, but we have to awaken to the fact that that's the standard we are living by, and to see others the same way. As God does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's That's beautiful. You know, we are to awaken his image. I love to think of those things, you know, to think, because if you think about being his image and likeness, I mean, that is an endless thing to think about. And it's so inspiring and uplifting rather than all this comparing yourself to others, which honestly, it just always brings you down. And it is so common. Everyone, oh, this one did that or this one didn't, and I didn't do it. Maybe I should do this. It is just that we've talked about it. I think we've had a roundtable on it. Comparisons are odious as well as odorous, as Shakespeare says, odorous. It's not a good idea. But to think of yourself as God is so uplifting. I mean, as an expression of God, I should say, is so uplifting and joyous. It's such, gives you ample time for lovely thoughts. Mrs. Well, just that, you know, that we be careful who your models are, because you're going to form models, and you've got to make sure they're good models. So why not make it the very best? Go ahead, Florence.
No, I was thinking of the scientific statement of being at the end of it, which says man is not material, man is spiritual, because God expressing himself as us? That's what we need to adhere to or awaken to and live as or by. So this human thing is the old man that we need to get rid of. I mean, unknow and know the truth about who we really are, the spiritual ideas of God. Perfect.
Yes. Thank you. And then everyone is free to be how wonderful God made them, and not limited and personal, as it said in the Watching Point. And personal, you know, once you get into that, it's just one big mess. But when you see everyone, I love it. I think it's page 281 in Science and Health. The one ego, the one mind, spirit, called God, is infinite individuality, which supplies all form and comeliness and reflects reality and divinity in individual spiritual man and things. That's a complete treatment for you, and that is where Mrs. Evans had said her practitioner told her that means you're not God, but God expresses himself as you. So what is it you don't like about yourself, your form, your comeliness, your individuality, your reality, your divinity? All of those things are being supplied and reflected by God to you as his child, the son or daughter of the king. Did you read the golden text?
1 John, beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is.
And, you know, we have that read every Sunday, don't we? To remind us of who we are. The sons and daughters of the King, with a capital K. We need to claim that. And then this week, I was thinking a lot of Psalm 139. In that psalm, it says that, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. Think about it. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. So tell me again, what's your problem? If you're fearfully and wonderfully made, seriously, what is your problem? Because, you know, we just give ourselves problems. You know, we see some little thing and we think, oh my God, what is that? Oh, wait, I better Google it. What is it? I'm going to poke, poke, poke and look, look, look. And pretty soon we've got some stupid little thing. But honestly, the truth is you're fearfully and wonderfully made, and that my soul knoweth right well. And my substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your substance is not matter, it's in spirit. That's your substance. And then, for thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. You know, that handles all this belief of heredity, prenatal beliefs. That's what Materia Medica pin things on. They love to pin it on that. Mrs. Eddy says that heredity is a good way to pin things on. No, thank you. You're not. You are made by God. Mm-hmm. He covered you in your mother's womb. Nothing could have entered your being but his love. So it's all your thoughts are numbered. He knows everything about you. That's why if you think you do have a problem, he's the doctor to go to. He made you. Mm-hmm. He knows everything about you. He's your great physician. Yeah. He'll tell you what you need to know and do.
I'm thinking of the forms that if you're initially going to a doctor, they want you to fill a form, and the form asks what is there blood pressure in your family, is there cancer in your family, is this, and then they will diagnose you accordingly. You know, if there's something shows up, oh well, you have an aunt that had it, or your mother had it, or your so-called had it. And so I'm addressing that hereditary thing, you know, it's, you're tied to it. It's all wrong, right?
It's all wrong. Right.
I think a wonderful treatment for heredity is the hymn, Christmas Morn. I love that hymn for treating the belief of heredity and idiosyncrasies and all that.
Yes.
The perfect treatment for that, I think.
There's that beautiful article we have on that where Mrs. Eddy gave that treatment for someone in a hospital, and it covered everything. Last Christmas morn, no mother's tear to thee belong, all everything. Yes.
So or cruel creed or earthborn taint.
Yes.
All of that is, you know, beautiful.
It is. Nancy, would you read what you sent in today?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I was struck by them in our lesson twice in the Science and Health. It was referred that we are God's offspring. So I looked up in miscellaneous writings, and Mrs. Eddy says, when we understand man's true birthright, that he is born not of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God, we shall understand that man is the offspring of spirit and not of the flesh. Recognize him through spiritual and not material laws, and regard him as spiritual and not material. His sonship, referred to in the text, is his spiritual relation to deity. It is not, then, a personal gift, but is the order of divine science. And from Retrospection and Introspection, page 68 to 69.
I love this. Health. No, Science yes, and I'm Health, sorry. Nancy. That is not.
Yes. That's no, I'm sorry. I meant to switch. Yes.
Okay.
It's man no, is the look- offspring. I did quote it wrong. I just realized. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Just
man is the offspring of spirit. The beautiful, good, and pure constitute his ancestry. His origin is not like that of mortals, in brute instinct, nor does he pass through material conditions prior to reaching intelligence. Spirit is his primitive and ultimate source of being. God is his father, and life is the law of his being. I love that.
Yes, I love it. And that's science and health. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
The beautiful, the good, and the pure. So you think you want something from your human family or something good from your human family? I'm sorry. No. It comes from God. Any good that they received, anybody's that ever has received, comes from God. And beautiful, good, and pure, I can't think of anything better than that. So let's acknowledge this, accept it as our birthright, our inheritance. And in this short article we have on our website by Una Willard, who was a practitioner and teacher from Portland, Oregon, I think in the 40s, your background, does the argument come to you that you didn't come from a good family or have the same opportunities as someone else? Stand on the fact that you came forth from God, that your background is God himself. You came forth from the background of the infinite grandeur of mind, from the capabilities and capacities of principle itself. You came forth from the sound and stable foundation of truth. Sincerity, genuineness, and fidelity are the very nature of your being. And from the hymn, "Thou art truth's honest child of pure and sinless heart." You came forth from and are the substance of spirit. You are the loved of love. Your whole background is the background of love and love only. And there never has been and never can be a power that can change the status of love's child. You emerge from the background of radiance and beauty. You are made of the inspiration and stimulation of soul. Life eternal is your life. You are not created delicate or weak or with a predisposition to take cold or have indigestion. You were created of life's substance. And life can never be less than vigorous and warm and energetic and spontaneous. You are life expressing itself. Then there is never anything less than life in your being. Your sense, faculties, and functions are operated by life, principle, mind, soul, spirit, truth, love. So if you're going to think about yourself, let's think about this, okay? Let's think about this. Don't think about all that other stuff. So tell me again, what was your problem? Really? Just knowing this, even a little bit, is so freeing and liberating. And the more you think on these things, all the good, the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionally to the occupancy in your thought. Mary Baker Eddy. So this is what you are, what man is. It's quite wondrous. There's so much to be grateful for. Now, in a sweet little article that Carrie sent about the golden text, knowing that we are the son of God, the perfect standard is held up before us in the life and character of Jesus Christ. We are commanded to put on the Lord Jesus. Our desire and aim should be not so much to imitate him as to appropriate him. I looked up that word appropriate. It means to set apart for a particular use. Or Gary was saying it means to take hold of something.
Mm-hmm. Possess it.
Possess it. Possess this character of Christ. We are commanded to put on the Lord Jesus. Let his purpose be our purpose. Let his mission be our mission. Let his disposition be our disposition. Let his mind be in us and his spirit permeate our being and control all our actions. Then we shall not be so much troubled about imitating him, for the transformation will be wrought within us, and the glorious end of redemption will be realized, complete conformity to the image of his dear Son. It doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when we shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. This is all we need to know now. So I love that too, the idea of having Christ as our model, not to imitate him, but appropriate him, to take him on, to be what he is, his mission, his disposition, his mind. Think about it. And how do you do that? How do you become that? Certainly by reading about it. And then thinking and doing. And Florence found that quote in The Healer about what was it, Florence, about if you want to heal like Jesus?
To live as Jesus lived.
Yeah. Yes. And to Follow in his footsteps.
His life. Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, we can all do more with that, right? All of us mm-hmm. can do more with that. So then I liked this. You know, I've been enjoying Reiki, and he, in his volume 2, did a section on the Sermon on the Mount. And last week we spoke about the Sermon on the Mount and how important it is, the great emphasis Mrs. Eddy put on it, that you could read it every week at our church service, and that would be enough. And again, how do we become more like Christ Jesus? Well, one big way is follow the Sermon on the Mount, right?
Yes.
That's a big way. And if we did that, all our problems would be healed in the world, in our lives. So it's a big goal, and we can't do it for anybody else, can we? No. So we can only do it for ourselves. And in that we have done much. So I'm gonna share with you, I think maybe each week if I think of it, what he writes about it. He just puts it kind of in his own words. In some instances, you'd hardly think he was talking about the Sermon on the Mount, but when you think about it, yes, he is. Herbert Reiki says, everyone desires happiness, success, abundance, security, and satisfaction. They want to feel as though they were blessed with every good thing. You are seeking to find this in your daily life and in your practice. Every patient comes to you for help along these lines. So here I'm going to give you 8 simple rules to follow. First, don't start out as though you know it all. That's the poor in spirit, right? There is a lot that you can learn every day. Be humble, be teachable, be receptive to the infinite spiritual unfolding of truth. Secondly, if you have been wrong, admit it quickly and vigorously. Don't justify or excuse your shortcomings. Don't hold on to mistakes and errors. Drop them just as you would a red-hot coals. Then you will find it easy to solve your problems and to help others solve theirs. I have certainly found that to be true. You hold on to an error or justify yourself, and boy, you just keep yourself in the slush. Okay, in the third place, don't think you can do anything of yourself. Always turn to the one divine mind for guidance and inspiration. Then follow the direction of this mind quietly and meekly. You are an instrument of righteousness, a spiritual tool in the hand of divine love. Let God use you. Fourth, really let God use you. Be active. You cannot find and experience all good things by just sitting around waiting for something to happen. Go into all the world and tell the good news. Good is ever present, but you must mentally look for it to find and experience it. Fifth, be charitable toward others. Blessed are the merciful. If you were in their shoes with the same educational and cultural background, if you had their same disappointments and frustrations, their fears and anxieties, you would probably do just as they do. If you are self-righteous, you drive people away. If you are charitable and kind, you will be able to help them overcome their mistakes. Six. Magnify the good in everyone. Think about it. Talk about it. Dream about it. Look through to the ideal in every situation, in every contact with every individual. Claim that mind which knows no evil about anyone or anything. In this way, you will be able to bring peace and harmony to everyone. Your work as a practitioner is to harmonize every situation. Help every patient to see that man is never a troublemaker. Man reflects divine love, which brings peace and satisfaction to all. This is the seventh rule. Lastly, if you are thinking and living rightly, and things do not seem to be running as smoothly as you would like, don't drain out your oil of gladness and become discouraged, blue, and unhappy. That will not help. Just pour in more and more of the divine oil of gladness until these things do run smoothly and you find unlimited harmony. That's blessed are the persecuted. So he's really, in a simple way, going through the Beatitudes, and well said, and most of you know from your own experience when he says it's so true. So it makes our lives a lot happier and less stressful. So anyway, that's what I'll do for today. There's many more, but now the story of Stephen. Anyone want to comment on that? I must say it wasn't. I don't think we don't have that story very much, mainly because you probably don't want to read about someone getting stoned to death every morning. I thought, oh my goodness. Well, there's a lot of good to that story, though, isn't there?
I love the part where he doesn't want to put it to their charge. He says,
yes.
He's forgiving them and he's telling them don't hold it to them. He's,
yes.
I think he must understand that it isn't really them somehow. He must really.
Yes, he. Yes, thank you. Yep. Yeah. We're going to talk about now some ways, you know, to when you. Persecution will come at times. To me, persecution is if you're, you know, not doing anything wrong, and yet suddenly people. Are giving you a hard time for no reason. Sometimes a very, very hard time. Now, this kind of interested me too. Carrie sent me this watching point, and it said, when in Acts, Stephen called the high priest stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, he personalized error and was stoned to death. His usefulness to God on this earth was over. Remember this and learn the lesson that your usefulness to God and man hinges on this vital point of impersonalizing error and seeing it as a claim apart from man, which is supported by belief, even as the parasite is supported by the oak tree. Seeing it as a claim apart from man. Separated from the tree, it falls and dies, but the tree lives on untouched by that which seems to be part of it. Now, I read that and thought, now let's see. Who said, "Woe unto you, you scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law"? Who said that?
Jesus
said that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't want to go around, calling people names. But sometimes you have to call it out. And then you will be hated for it. I mean, I think this is one of the lessons we learn from Jesus' example.
Yeah, they said his rebuke was fearful.
It was. But again, you don't go looking for trouble, and he didn't. He was what they call the meek and mild and all of that. So I guess every situation is different. But I just see Christian Scientists quarreling sometimes over this kind of thing. That's not being loving. Or, why didn't you rebuke that? So I don't know whether each of us should be in judgment of what others do, except to mind our own P's and Q's. And if we feel we need to rebuke, then if we feel motivated by God, then we should.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who is telling of the foe in ambush? Many healings have come about by a good, strong rebuke because it wakes up the error that is going on. Mm-hmm. And as we know, it's not personal. It's never personal. It's always just an error.
They were interfering with what he was doing.
Yes.
They were coming in after him.
That's right.
Stop his healing and teaching.
And Jesus knew what his mission was.
Yeah.
So because he knew what his mission was, he knew when to rebuke and when to be wise and just walk away. So.
Yes.
Yeah, he was he moved as God led him to. I mean, he was that close in thought.
So. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and you see it, you know, we're watching that season 5 of The Chosen. You see it building up in him, right? I mean, all of a sudden, holy Moses, when he throws the money changers out of the temple and, you know, and he's making a whip. It was premeditated. He knew it was coming, but he couldn't bear or stand to see that going on. Now, could he? Now, can you turn the other cheek and just not in that instance? You can't turn the other cheek, not in that instance. And he didn't.
The offense was against God.
Right.
Yes, there again, that's true. Taking offense, Mrs. Eddy, when the offense is against God. Now, in, again, Herbert Reike, in the article, also volume 2, Rules of Healing from the Gospel, he speaks about Jesus in the crucifixion. You may see how Jesus applied simple rules of love when he was before Pilate and during the trial and crucifixion. Jesus did not argue back. For the most part, he was silent. When the Jews asked him whether he was the Son of God, he replied simply, "You are accusing me of that." He did not antagonize Pilate. He almost converted him. The most important thing was to unify thought in regard to his ministry and life work. You know, it would have been awful if at the end he just, you know, goes kaflooey in some way. He kept himself under God's control the whole time. He was an example of what he preached. He knew that to keep right ideas alive in the consciousness of mankind was much more important than his own physical comfort. This was divine love expressing itself. There were many human opinions expressed in regard to him. He put forth all his effort to live so that eventually all the world would recognize him as the Son of God. You will remember when Jesus was on the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He did not accuse them of being handled by an actual wicked mind. Their acts were the result of thoughtfulness. It's interesting. There were not two types of mind at war with each other. He once said, "Thou couldst have no power over me except it were given thee from above." He knew that this heavenly mind alone was in operation. That's a good point. He refused to see two minds operating even then. Nothing else could express itself or operate. Because he entered no hatred, resentment, or bad feelings toward others, he could feel no pain. He knew that he was safe in the divine mind, which loves and is loved. He knew that all of us find our security in that same consciousness. Hear his words. "And the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one, I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one." He demonstrated what he preached down to the last moment. He did not come under this belief of persecution. He refused to see it or accept it. Kept going back to the one mind, love. And because of that, he overcame hate, death, all of it, didn't he? And in any of those instances, if he had submitted to it, it wouldn't have been that way. Now we see this other examples throughout the Bible, not quite like this one, but certainly Daniel in the lion's den, accused falsely. And what the minute he was accused of doing, you know, praying to God, what did he go and do?
Prayed some more.
Yeah, he went and prayed some more.
With his windows open.
Yep. Wasn't not at all bothered by the whole picture. And in the lion's den, beautiful pictures, looking out the window, looking toward God, not looking at the lions, not worried he was going to be eaten alive. No, and he wasn't. And what a victory, and what an example. Mrs. Eddy, you know, her last years, it was the, what is called the last friend suit, right? They were after her to get her. She refused to hate. This is a very beautiful excerpt from an article that Carrie sent. This is talking about Stephen and Paul and Saul. While he was spurred on to assail these people, Paul, they were waiting quietly at Damascus, aware of the approaching evil, but fully conscious of the protecting presence of God. They knew that his love surrounded them and that no harm could touch them while they realized his power. Their weapons were spiritual, while Saul's were carnal, and they were not only protecting themselves from his malicious assault, but they were earnestly praying that he might be converted, and to their prayers we might largely credit his change of thought. That's interesting. They were praying for his conversion. Christians often pray for their own security and safety, but few of them are as earnest in their prayers for the conversion of the one who would try to harm them. It's very important under persecution. That's what Jesus did too. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's what Stephen did. Yeah. What Linda quoted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. If all Christians would assume this position, they would not only be safe themselves, but would change their enemies into friends.
That's Mrs. Eddy's prayer.
It is Mrs. Eddy's prayer. Yes. And that is also... hope I can find it. Mrs. Eddy says that in another post, very beautifully says this. Let's find it. You know, it is what she says, what I will only pray for those who wish to do me harm, right? I can't quote it exactly. It's somewhere. I have the exact quote somewhere, but and so must we. We mustn't go down into the muck and hate and fight and get all aggravated. It's so important that we don't. Yes, I think it's this one, the whole armor of God. Now, someone else, it's actually in the Henty book where she's saying, you know, look at all the persecution Paul went under. And it was because he personalized error and all this kind of thing. Well, maybe he did at times. Maybe it was hard not to all the time. But I think generally did a pretty good job on not. And he did change from Saul to Paul. And just being sometimes what you are, just being what you get persecuted. Mrs. Eddy says, the baneful effect of evil associates is less seen than felt. The inoculation of evil human thoughts ought to be understood and guarded against. The first impression made on a mind which is attracted or repelled according to personal merit or demerit is a good detective of individual character. Certain minds meet only to separate through simultaneous repulsion. They are enemies without preliminary offense. The impure are at peace with the impure. Only virtue is a rebuke to vice. 449 in Science and Health. Sometimes you don't have to do a thing. People just won't like you because of your Christ, and that is called the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm. Jesus did all that healing. They still hated him.
It wasn't until chapter, I think, 39 in Matthew when he tells them all off. I mean, he had infinite patience, love, kindness. He did nothing but good. Finally, to wake them up, he called them a bunch of hypocrites and whited sepulchers. And that's okay, too, if you have to. I mean, it wasn't going to change anything. They were going to crucify him anyway, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's true with Stephen. And a lot Daniel, just because they were good people doing the right thing, sometimes people will hate you for it. So, the whole armor of God spoken of by Paul may be defined as the protective spiritual consciousness of the presence of God, manifested in goodness, health, holiness, harmony, beauty, and bounty. The understanding that inexhaustible life is the center and circumference of all existence. That man and the universe are the reflection of intelligent idea of all that God is. The truth governs all creation with absolute and harmonious power and might. The divine love fills the world with glory and gladness, holding within it its own unchanging loveliness, everything that really exists. The armor of God may also be characterized as the conviction that evil of every name and nature did not have origin in the principle of all being. Therefore, it never had intelligence, power, nor might. It never was. In brief, then, the whole armor of God is the protective consciousness of the allness of God good and the nothingness of evil. And then, he who puts on the armor of God will pray in the presence of dire injustice. Father, forgive them, as Jesus prayed while on the cross. Or he will repeat, The utterance of Mrs. Eddy. This is the quote I was looking for. I would enjoy taking by the hand all who love me not and saying to them, I love you, and would not knowingly harm you. Miscellaneous writings. Nearsighted pride, which blinded Paul to the divine rights of man, disappeared when he perceived man's unity with his heavenly Father. And putting on the armor of selflessness, he bore without complaint subsequent persecutions, injustice, cruelty, and even poverty and loneliness. Ingratitude and disdain moved him only to pity those who showed such ignorance of the beneficent law of divine love. And he reaped an immediate reward in the joy of returning good for evil. That is, he rejoiced in the knowledge of the nothingness of evil and the allness of good. He who puts on this armor is the Christian scientist who has enlisted to lessen evil, disease, and death. A soldier who is valiantly striving to overcome the domination of the physical senses and knows that he is newborn of spirit. He does not wait for complete mastery over bodily conditions before entering upon his God-given tasks, but he presses resolutely on to a fuller comprehension of life and love and truth. The hungry children of men come to him to be fed with the bread of life and are satisfied. The sinful come to be regenerated and are lifted up from materialism to behold themselves as the image and likeness of their Father. The sick are made to rejoice in freedom from fear and pain, and the tears of those who mourn are wiped away. Now, prayerfully, none of us will have to go through some of these afflictions that those before us have gone through. Some of them are going through those afflictions now in various countries. Most of us have gone through some of it in some degree, which is why we're talking about it now, because this is the only way to escape it and not get plastered by it, so to speak. It's the only way. You have to. And the greatest, Mrs. Evans said this, the greatest growth she ever had was through persecution. And she was persecuted because she stood up to the organization. And they did everything they could to destroy her and this church. It happens. I bet many of you here that I'm talking to now have had it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you did nothing wrong, but suddenly people are just not liking you for some reason and maybe trying to interfere with things. So only way to love.
And, you know, we need to recognize when we are doing the highest right, there will be those in positions of so-called human power who will be threatened by it. So be ready and don't be intimidated.
And we will end now with another article by Carrie. I thought it was very beautiful. It brings out our beautiful hymn, O Gentle Presence, Peace and Joy and Power. And to be thinking of that during the day, during the night, all the time, what a great, tremendous power that is in itself.
Starting
there and finishing.
This is by Jesse E. Dodge from a 1930 Sentinel. Thank you. She writes, on page 519 of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes, human capacity is slow to discern and to grasp God's creation and the divine power and presence which go with it, demonstrating its spiritual origin. Here is one of our greatest difficulties. The slowness of the so-called human mind in grasping the ever-presence of God and the peace and joy and power which are rightfully ours as heirs of God, good. But when we get even But when we get even a slight glimpse of the presence of God, who forgiveth all these and not thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, we can prove to some extent the power of spiritual understanding in the overcoming of discordant conditions. Error would divert us from the right way of thinking by intimating an easier, more pleasant way. But we need only to recognize the aggressiveness of the suggestion and refuse to be misled. Suppose one were traveling by automobile through a country which had a clearly defined and paved road. But another suggested that he leave this road and take one which looked more attractive and promised to be easier and shorter. If the traveler took this second road, however, he might soon get it into very rough country, and this not only would delay his progress, but might injure his car. Eventually, he would be obliged to return to the main road in order to reach his destination. And he might have to turn completely around and go back to the point where he had left the highway. Is not this what we have to do when we wander through the paths of careless thinking? We get away from the presence of God, good, and soon we find ourselves believing in the reality of sin, disease, and death. Before we realize it, we may be in a rut of resentment over some fancied injury. Fear for the physical well-being of a loved one may develop. A belief in sin may be entertained, or a temptation to listen to or impart idle gossip may be indulged. The farther we go, the more real these things seem, the more time we lose, and the harder it is to get back to the right way of thinking. But we can live in the presence of divine love, and we can be conscious of the peace and power and joy, which will solve our problems. If we waken in the morning with a thought of God's presence with us and carry this thought with us through all the day and commit ourselves unreservedly into his keeping through the night, we shall enjoy happiness such as Paul knew, and the peace of which he so beautifully wrote to the Corinthians, quote, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace, and the God of love and peace shall be with you." End quote.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.